Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in for this episode of Causes or Cures. I'm Dr. Eakes, your host, and I hope you're all doing well and feeling good and all that jazz. Okay. Did you ever notice a difference in how you feel when you sit in nature versus being inside a city office building or a small cramped apartment or a loud house party? Think about it for a few seconds. I definitely notice a difference, a significant difference, to the point that I 100% believe that there are unique healing properties in nature that we shouldn't ignore. I'd go as far to say we all need frequent trips into nature to function properly. I think people would be better people if they spent more time in nature. How's that? It sounds simple. But a lot of people on this planet don't spend much time in nature at all. But how much time do you spend in nature? Is it enough? Nature is great for my physical and mental health and improving my bird watching skills and plant identification skills and poisonous snakes and non-poisonous snakes. But what do I know? I'm just an anecdote. However, on today's episode, we will talk about some of the actual science evidence showing that being in nature is good for us, in particular, significant to our mental health, and even more specifically, in fighting off stress, anxiety, and depression. My guest today is Dr. Jay Madoc, and he is going to chat about his research on how nature benefits mental health and the theories for why it is so beneficial. In addition to stress, anxiety, and depression, he also will talk about how exposure to nature helps ADHD and PTS, or post-traumatic stress. This is for both kids and adults. And he'll also talk about ongoing research involving veterans with PTS and universities, college campuses around the country. All right, so let's connect with Dr. Madoc and hear what he has to say. All right, everybody, we are connecting with Dr. Jay Madoc, and we're going to talk about this relationship between mental health and nature. But first, before we dive into that topic, Dr. Madoc, do you mind taking a few minutes to introduce yourself and tell us about what you do?
Sure, and thank you for having me here today. I'm delighted to do this. As I said, my name is Jay Madoc, and I'm a professor at Texas A&M University. And my training, I'm an experimental psychologist, so looking all of how we work on health behaviors and how we change health behaviors, etc. And I run this center called the Center for Health and Nature, which is a collaborative effort between Texas A&M and then Houston Methodist, which is the top hospital in the state of Texas. And Texan by Nature, which is a conservation organization. So, really, a fairly unique combination of three organizations. And we work to really understand the health and healing power of spending time in natural environments, and then how we work to do behavioral change interventions to get more people into nature, especially in disadvantaged populations.
That's fantastic. And I how did you get interested in the topic of mental health and nature?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was a physical activity researcher for my entire career, and about 10 years ago, I got invited to give the keynote address at the World Trails Conference in Jeju Island, South Korea. And so I went out and met all these people that worked on all of the trail systems in the world. And so people that were from the Appalachian Trail, from the Horn of Africa, from the Tasmanian Trail, I mean, you name it, they were there. And had started doing this research, and I had all the physical activity stuff and why we should be active, but then started really tapping into all this nature stuff. And I'm like, wow, there's really this fascinating research. But at the time in 2014, it hadn't really kind of coalesced. And then I met the participants at this conference, and they were the happiest people I've ever met in my career. And I've been to a whole bunch of public health conferences, and we're typically not that happy. And so I'm like, there is something here, like, the affect and the mood. And then when you get into the literature, you're like, wow, it actually makes a huge difference for mental health and physical health to spend time in natural environments. So that's geeked me out, and lucky that my career has been able to, support that kind of personal interest in this health and nature connection.
And just from a personal note, I can relate to that. I always call it like there's just rhythm in nature that just kind of soothes you. But I haven't put the science to it like you did. Just a feeling. So your recent study, and we'll talk a little bit more broadly about the work you do, but the study that you did in urban Texas, can you talk a little bit about that? Basically, who was included in that study? And how did you access mental health data just to kind of set the stage for folks?
Yeah, so we were really interested in exposure to nature in urban areas. Particularly as America becomes more and more urbanized, we're looking at about 80% of Americans live in cities, and so and mental health is becoming at kind of crisis levels throughout the country, especially in this post-COVID world. And so we were really interested in saying, how does nature affect health and human healing? And so we use something called the Texas Outpatient Registry. And so that, what that does, it just takes account of every single time that somebody goes to the doctor outside of the hospital and gets care, and then it's coded for what they got care for. So we took every visit for anxiety, for depression, and for bipolar disorder, and looked at those across 1,100 zip codes in Texas. So, kind of a large thing, every urban zip code that we had in the state. And we have a lot of large cities in Texas. And so certainly, Houston and Dallas and Austin and San Antonio and El Paso, we have a lot of cities that are in the top 20 in the country. And so really interesting kind of looking across that and the impact on mental health.
And you excluded the rural zip codes, right? So it was just urban. You're focused on the urban areas and nature
Yeah,
exposure.
it's an interesting thing as we look into nature, and I'll get a little bit into what our nature variable was. It's actually something called Nature Score. And so there's a group that's affiliated with the Oregon Health and Sciences University that has been developing this, and it really looks at how green spaces are in each zip code, right? And so it looks at the amount of tree canopy, it looks at blue spaces, which are their water features, looks at kind of open land, et cetera. And so that works really well in urban spaces, where if you're in a city, we can see how many trees are planted in that city. In rural spaces, especially here in Texas, what we run into is that over 90% of the land in Texas is in private hands. And so I can look at a zip code, and the zip codes get real big in rural areas too, right? I can look at a zip code, and there's a lot of ranches where there's cows and everything, but the people that live in the rural communities probably don't have access to that space, and so it's a little trickier. So we wanted to kind of keep this clean and just look at folks living in urban spaces.
Okay, and I want to get into the nature score, what that all entails a little bit more. It's hard to believe, though, that statistics, 80% of Americans live in urban areas. I didn't know it
Yeah.
was that high.
One thing that's amazing is if you look, you go back to 1900 and you look at the rural population and the number of people that live in rural areas, and it's the exact same today that it was 120 years ago. So all of the growth in America since 1900 has been in urban areas. Yeah, mind blowing,
Wow.
right? Like, and this is a worldwide phenomenon. If you go, certainly in China, we've seen this rise of mega cities, and people are leaving rural areas. And so we're seeing large cities grow up throughout the world. And it's just that, the economic advantages of living in an urban area are quite prevalent. And that's why we need to really look at how we're designing cities, and are they promoting health or detracting from health?
That's the one thing, economic benefits, but then you have the health side of things in the modern world. Okay, so the nature score and the nature score based study, which was in the title of your research, and you it looks like it was the values ranged from 0, which is like a poor nature score, and then to 100. And then the four groups you had: nature deficient, nature adequate, nature rich, and nature utopia, which sounds great to me. But how did you come up with that? Like, how did they get these scores and these categories?
Yeah, it's actually fairly complex, and this really runs out of the group in Oregon that's making this, but it's using machine learning and artificial intelligence to actually model the green space around. So they use a variety of databases. So there's something called the Natural Vegetation Differentiation Index, which looks at all the green space across the country, right? So that's one of the major variables that go into it. There's other things like satellite imagery and tree canopy. And so it brings in all these different data factors into it, and then codes at a level of how much nature is in each parcel, right? So it parcels it down, and you can actually, for anybody who's interested, it's a group called Nature Quant. And if you Google that, you can put in your address and it will give you your nature score for your address. So a great way to find out how green is my neighborhood. And every address in America is in there, which is pretty wild. So it is this huge,
Oh,
AI
wow.
machine learning database that we've been using to kind of look at this level of greenness. And it feels that it's an advantage over things like the Natural Vegetation Differentiation Index, which were used in the past. This brings in a more holistic that includes the blue spaces, which are really
Okay. Yeah, that was my next question. How did we used to measure nature exposure versus what you're, and this is the first study with this?
This is the first study to look at mental health as an outcome,
Mental health
yes.
as an outcome.
Yeah,
Okay.
I think it's the second study ever. So
Okay.
there was a study published out of Harvard last year that looked at nature score and racial, ethnic makeup and income makeup. And it did find that people that, not surprisingly, more wealthy people and less Black Americans had access to diverse nature. The disparities we tend to see in this country.
Okay, so with this study, what were some of the key findings or things that stood out to you from the study that you did?
Yeah, so really interesting is that, there seems to be a threshold on this nature score at about 40. Kind of that low nature versus the high nature. We saw a significant drop in the high nature on utilization of mental health services. So people are less likely in a nature-rich neighborhood to look for anxiety, depression, bipolar, doctor's visits. And so it is at the doctor's visit level. It's one thing that does interact with that is health insurance coverage, the ability to actually get to a doctor. That's one of the reasons we use urban areas where we would have enough people treating mental health that they would be there. But yeah, there's this real stark difference, and it seems that above 40, that kind of disappears. So you don't have to be in nature utopia to get the benefits of nature, but you can't really be in that deprived nature area. So I think we've all been in different urban areas where, you're there and it's hard to find a tree, right? And those areas seem to really be negative for mental health, and people are really searching out, more treatment options. And so it does say there's a potential solution here that, for city planners, for government officials, that if we green these low neighborhoods, we can really see a difference. And so I think a great example is some of the work that's been done in Philadelphia with these vacant lots, where they take over vacant lots and they either put in a pocket park or they put in a community garden or something else where they kind of rehab something that was all concrete and make it into something that's green. And so those kind of micro things can actually really make a difference in the community.
That's the 40 number. That's what I was thinking from a practical perspective. Like, how could you take this and apply it? And this would be something for like city governments, urban planners, that they could just try. And it doesn't seem like it would cost a whole bunch of money. I don't know, but.
Yeah, there's really two options, right? One is that they're rehabbing sites that are already there, and that makes a lot of sense. But as more and more Americans are moving to urban areas, the other thing is to change design codes, right? And so when a developer comes in the design code, you can set aside you need to put, a park within that or X number of green space for every acre that you build on. And so you can actually put in within codes to require green spaces. And that's a good way to kind of look at something that will not cost the governments any more money, but will be put on the developer. And what we see is that neighborhoods in green spaces actually tend to have higher a value for the properties there. And so people want to live near green spaces. And so it actually benefits the developer to put in more green spaces in the developments.
And something I noticed in your study, which I've seen in other types of studies talking about green spaces, there was a demographic split, right? It seems like the wealthier neighborhoods had more exposure to nature versus the less wealthy folks.
Yeah, so we did control in the outcome. So we did actually in the outcome, we still see that difference,
Yeah.
in mental health utilization after controlling for income and race ethnicity. But yes, I mean, higher wealthy folks tend to live in greener neighborhoods, and there's something called green gentrification that's really problematic for us from a public health standpoint. And what that says is when we come in and we build, these great walking trails and put a great park in, the cost of the real estate around that area goes up. And what we see is that that increases the property tax. And here in Texas, most of our municipal government's income, because we do not have a state income tax, comes from property taxes. And so even somebody living in that neighborhood that hasn't moved, that hasn't changed anything, sees the housing price double and gets priced out of this neighborhood because we made it greener and nicer. And so this is a real big concern of the work that we do is this green gentrification, because it's so desired by people that it really does make this difference of I'm willing to pay a lot more to live in a space that's got access to nature.
Yeah, something to figure out. Not an easy solution, I'm sure. So this really made me think, and I think it makes a lot of people think about, the causes of mental health issues. And there's been, I think, over the years, a lot of work kind of expanded that it's not so, it's probably not one thing, right, that causes, a mental health struggle. But can you elaborate on why this relationship is so important for mental health, this exposure to nature. What is it about nature? Why do we need nature?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a lot of parts of that, but I'll answer a few of them. So in the experimental literature, we bring people into the lab and we'll expose them to natural environments versus built environments. And what you see in as little as a 10-minute bout is a change in mood, a reduction in stress hormones like cortisol, and an increased ability to pay attention, right? So it's called attention restoration theory. And it seems that the complexity of nature, the fractal patterns of it actually refresh our brain, which is just fascinating, right? And so in these little micro doses, we'll see this. On the other side, the macro doses of nature, this is a long weekend. So there's a study that was done in Japan where they took folks either out to the forest or had them stay in the city for a weekend. And those that went to the forest did something called forest bathing, which sounds like a strange term. You're not taking a bath in the forest, but what I like to say is it's mindfulness in nature, right? It's being present, it's feeling the wind on your face, smelling the smell of the forest, really looking and getting fully engaged in nature. One weekend, and they measured their natural killer cell activity, right? So this is a part of our immune function that helps us fight cancer. And they found that within a day, people had higher natural killer cell function. Amazing, right? One day, the end of the weekend, still up. A week later, still significantly higher. 1 month later, your immune functioning is still better from spending a weekend in nature. And so there seems to be this, really powerful effect. And now, what is that coming from? We're still trying to figure that out. And so one thing that you'll see with nature in the environment is that it does, it reduces air pollution. And so trees can reduce PM 2.5, which is the common pollutant that really bothers our lungs. So cities, think about cities, okay, air pollution, huge. It also reduces the decibel level of the city, right? So the noise factor goes down. Another common stressor in cities, right? Loud traffic, et cetera, more green space, it's going to be quieter. The just views of nature seem to make a really big difference. And so there's the kind of classic study, which was done in the early 80s. They took hospital patients, right? And they're coming in for surgery and they're getting assigned randomly to either a room with a view of a park or a room with a view of a parking lot. And they find, this is amazing, they find that just having that view of a park reduces the time that you spend post-op in the hospital, reduces your pain medication, and reduces complications with your surgery. So like, and that's just sight, right? And so, wow, sight's got a thing. And you know, some of the there's restoration through bird sounds and natural sounds. So that seems to have effect. I've got a colleague at the University of Washington who's currently looking at the effect of terpenes, which is the scent that plants put off, and is there a biochemical pathway through smell that's actually making a difference? So, you know, we're kind of in the early days of really trying to understand why. Like, we know that there's these positive effects from nature, but really trying to parcel out what is it about nature that makes a difference? And it seems to be these multiple pathways. And the more sense of your five senses that are engaged in nature, the better the effect seems to be.
And I mean, I guess it's like we evolved with nature. So, and we keep trying to, like, I guess civilization, modern civilization, we keep trying to pull ourselves out of it and away from the trees, but it doesn't, I don't know, maybe we, our nerves or something, circuitry doesn't evolve so fast and we need it. I don't know.
Yeah, well,
It's like a
think about
craving.
this, is that our brains are pretty much identical to the brains of the ancient Greeks and Romans, right? Like, evolution does not take place in, a decade, a century, et cetera. Like, it takes thousands and thousands of years. And so, you know, our brains are the same. We were used to being outside. And in the last 20 years, we have seen a change in our population that is unbelievable. If we even go back to 2010, 2012, there's a study that looks at the amount of time that adults spend with major media, right? Be that from your cell phone to the television, radio. And it was about 10 hours a day. We saw a huge bump up with COVID, not surprisingly, when everybody was stuck at home. And today, the 2022, 2023 data is showing we're about 13 hours a day. So we've had about a 3 hour per day increase in major media and time in front of screens in just a decade. So that kind of, 2010, kind of the smartphones. And now we see this huge difference. And, for anybody that's working with young people, I work in, university, my students all have their laptops in front of them in front of class, and then they're on their phone. And you just are young people today are in front of screens so much, and we've removed ourselves from nature. And there's not a lot of surveillance. We're actually working on kind of trying to get how much time do Americans spend in nature. There's one national study, it's about a decade old right now, and it shows that more than 50% of Americans get less than 2 hours a week in nature, right? And so, like, that's very, very little time. And it's not surprising that it's having negative effects on our mental and physical health.
I recently had a researcher on to talk about the teen mental health crisis, and she was talking about the social media and the constant, we're basically saturated in it, and sort of ties into what you're saying now.
Yeah, and I think, as a psychologist and as somebody working in public health, I think, as we talk about mental health, it gets to be this. Oh, this is bad. Here's all the bad things that affect us. And environmental health too, right? Here's all the bad things. And what I love about nature is that nature can be the solution. Like, we've actually found, like, the positive thing. And I've got a couple of kids, and my younger son is 15, and brought him and his friends out to nature. And what I do is I find places in rural places, rent an Airbnb that doesn't have Wi-Fi and doesn't have a cell signal. And it's amazing what happens. You know, it takes a little bit of adjustment, but then they get out into nature and you just see this change, and like, wow, I can concentrate, my ADHD symptoms diminish when kids are in nature, and which is hugely problematic right now. They have more fun, they get connected to each other at a level that, is so different from what we see in their daily school when they're on Instagram or Snapchat, and they're, responding to each other literally nonstop. It's unbelievable. And so being able to take people and remove, kids and get them into nature, I think has such a positive benefit on their well-being.
And just to, there's this whole movement, and I'm sure you've seen it in psychology with, virtual reality and simulation that can't recreate what actual nature can do. Is that fair to say?
Great question. We are actually experimenting right now. I have a VR lab and we are looking at the effect of virtual reality, nature. And so what it looks like is that it's health, it's better than nothing, but it's not the real thing, as you'd probably guess. And so we're using it, we really think of it as adjunct therapy. And so out of our center, we had a group do a study with oncology patients. So they're coming in for their chemotherapy, and which is not a fun time. And we actually we did two conditions. One had the nor well the control was the normal room that you're in, right? That sterile room with a television on. Nobody likes that room. The second condition was what we call a biophilic room. So they put a whole bunch of plants in the room with the patients, so they got to kind of enjoy the plants when they were there. And the third condition, they were given the VR headset with a nature app on there. So they're able to explore different natural environments when they went through. And we found that both the biophilic room and the VR outperformed the traditional room. And so in a place where you can't get to nature, if it's not safe, if the weather is terrible in the winter when it's dark, most of the time, VR might be a good way to supplement. But I'd never want it to replace time in actual nature. And as I said, with the sense, if you're just down to sight and sound, you're missing out on all those other beneficial parts of nature.
Yeah, I can't remember the quote. I think it was by Oscar Wilde, and he was talking about the importance of like saturating all your senses. It was something poetic, but that it'll save your soul. This made me think of that. You mentioned how nature exposure can be really beneficial to kids or folks who have ADHD, which I agree is a growing problem. And it's funny. I'm glad you mentioned that because I have had listeners ask me, "Can you please do something, for holistic approaches for ADHD." So this is good that they'll know that. And in your study, when you were looking at, depression and stress and anxiety, did you see a specific disorder sort of more impacted than others, or was it about the same?
It worked for all three of them, which is amazing.
All
I think
three.
that's the neat thing, is that it actually was good for all three. And we didn't know about bipolar kind of coming in. We were expecting anxiety and depression, but we actually found that a reduction in mental health visits, and overall there's a reduction in mental health visits for high nature area. So it really does seem to be beneficial across the spectrum to get that nature dose. And to live in a community with a high level of nature. The nice thing, the community is like you're surrounded by it, right? So if you're in a high nature area, you open the window and you can see it. So you don't have to like really purposely try to do anything, which is, I think, for any of us that work in behavioral interventions, we know like it's tough to get people to do stuff and stick with it. And so that's why these high nature communities are like they're built in. So you walk out the door, you look out your window, and you're getting that dose, which is nice to have that there.
And I wonder too, if you're a teacher, if you're a parent working with your child on homework, getting into nature might help,
Yeah, so
perhaps.
there's a really growing literature on green schoolyards, and so this is the idea. If you really just think of what does a school playground typically look like, it's typically blacktop, right, with a basketball court and everything. So they've been changing these around and putting in more green and natural elements, and they find like amazing stuff. They find that kids' motor development for young kids is a lot better with these natural ones. The big one that they find, and if anybody is a principal or a vice principal out there, it reduces fights. And so, the kids tend to be less
Huge.
likely to fight with each other, huge. And that attention restoration is happening, right? So, kids that go and play in green spaces during the day have better attention when they come back. So, that ADHD symptom, but for any kid, right? Like more attention, and for adults too, like pretty much for everybody, that 10 minutes in nature resets our ability to pay attention. So that post after lunch kind of slump that we get, you can actually get rid of that by getting 10-minute walk in nature, playing in a green playground, which is pretty fantastic.
As I was reading your study, it reminded me, I'm sure The Last Child in the Woods, the book, when they talk about nature deficit disorder. And I remember when I went to school, there was someone who grew up in the city. And the first time he saw a chipmunk, he pointed at it and he goes, "Oh, it's a mini squirrel." And I couldn't believe it. And I was like, "No, that's not a mini squirrel." But I was also thinking maybe there's some benefit to
conservation benefits. We see this growing disconnect with our environment, and people just sort of, we function in a vacuum, and that can't be good for our health in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge piece of what we do is that everything is interconnected, and if we don't preserve our natural environment, we're going to have, we're not going to be able to get into nature. And so we're looking a lot, we're working with some different partners right now to really try to understand how getting people into nature can improve conservation attitudes, right? And make people really like, this is important to me. And I want to protect this. And the big thing that we're seeing now in our young people is eco-anxiety. With climate change, there's this huge concern of, oh my gosh, this is something that's so uncontrollable and so threatening, to us. And so what we work at is, okay, here's nature, here's conservation, here's how you can contribute to a more sustainable planet. And it doesn't need to be, you don't have to put the weight of climate change on your shoulders. But you can do some things that are actionable to make a difference in your neighborhood, in your community. And this is that cycle of, conservation breeds more time in nature for people. And, we really depend on each other, I think, both the nature and the individual to make sure that we're in balance together. So, yeah, I think it's a super important part of the work that we do.
And does it increase physical activity if there's more green space in urban areas?
Yes, people are much more active outside. We call it green exercise. And what I tell people is, as a physical activity researcher for all these years, the analogy that I make is the Reese's peanut butter cup. It's the commercials of you got your peanut butter and my chocolate, my peanut butter, that together they're even better, right? And so when we put exercise and time in nature together, we get this synergistic benefit, right? That you actually enhance both the mental health and physical health benefits of exercise by doing it outside. And so something that, if you have the choice of, going for a run in the gym or going for a run outside, choose outside, choose outside wherever you can, because you're just going to get all those nature benefits at the same time. And it doesn't take any more time out of your day, which I think is a really good thing to think about.
It's so, it seems so easy that just a little bit amount of exposure to nature, folks who are struggling in cities with mental health issues, which is a whole lot of people, I wonder just like getting them to do it, just a little, it sounds like it doesn't take much in
Yeah,
terms of getting
you'll see the
exposure.
benefits in as little as 10 minutes. And so, what I give a lot of talks on health and nature to a lot of different audiences. And I said the issue really is that people don't think about it. We've had our health and well-being recommendations, pretty set for, I came into this field in the mid-90s, right around the time that we were getting the physical activity recommendations out. And so everyone knows, oh, I've got to be active, 150 minutes a week, I've got to eat a diet that's high in fruit and vegetable. I need to get my sleep. I need to, avoid or limit substances. But nature doesn't make that list. And, one of the things we're really trying to change is like spending time in nature needs to be on the list of things that you need to do to keep yourself healthy. And it can be as little as, a 10-minute break outside. It can be taking your laptop outside, taking your kids to the park. There's real things that, and people like it. Like it's one of those like public health recommendations that you're actually like, this one's fun. I like this one. So I think getting it just on people's radar screens, that this is important and does make a difference, and you're not wasting time, right? I think I could be doing something, and why am I sitting out here when I could be productive in my office, right? And I think that's, we always said, look, you're that 10-minute walk just reset your attention ability. You're gonna be much more productive because you did it. Rather than sitting and trying to do 10 minutes of work.
That's such a great point, and it made me think of a conversation I had with a sleep researcher. People oftentimes when they want to be super productive or work, like, oh, I don't have to sleep. But now the research is so clear that you need sleep, and as you and your center are showing, and other researchers out there, we need nature.
And
So,
spending time in nature improves sleep.
yeah,
Double.
okay. Well, that's actually really good to know too. And I was going to ask you about that. I didn't know how to phrase the question, but I was thinking something along the lines of circadian rhythms. and sleep. But so spending time in nature improves sleep.
Yeah,
Okay.
and there's a large connection with quality of sleep and exposure to daylight. It does set your circadian rhythm, and natural light is just so powerful for us, and it's much brighter even on a cloudy day than any of our indoor lights. And so even if you can just get natural light, in the morning, sometime an hour or two within waking up, depending on when the sun comes up where you are. And then some evening daylight, and those kind of seem to set your circadian clock and really do help the sleep-wake cycle. And so, there's definitely people that spend time in nature report better sleep than people that don't.
I wanted to go back to what we chatted briefly before I hit record, because I know that a lot of veterans listen to this podcast and they're interested in holistic approaches to mental health types of issues. So I wanted to give you an opportunity. You mentioned you were doing a study with the military in nature. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we have a new program that's just beginning. It was a congressional appropriation last year for a program called Military Families Outdoors. And this is with our active duty military and their families. And it's through some amazing partners. So we work with the Defense Health Agency, which provides all of the healthcare services for our military members, the National Park Service, who is, so supportive of getting people out into nature. Every active duty military member in this country gets a free America the Beautiful Pass, which allows you free access to every national park site in the country. We would definitely want to spread the word on that. Blue Star Families, which works on belonging and engagement of our military families, is the lead on this project. And they work on a variety of events to get our military into nature. Wilderness Inquiry, which works on everything from a thing called Canoe Mobile, which is an adaptive canoe. So people with physical disabilities can get onto the water and experience that through some higher engagement stuff like 2 weeks of backpacking in the wilderness. And then the YMCAs, which are offering our children a chance during summer camp to get into nature and into some of the national parks. And so my role on that is we're running the evaluation of all these programs and how do we do it best? How do we make sure that we're getting the benefits for the people and their families that are giving their lives for our country. And I think it's their service is appreciated. And we know that, and the government knows, and this is amazing recognition that spending time in nature is important, especially with the stress that a lot of these families are under. So we're just delighted to be part of that and really hopefully make a difference in these people's lives.
So, as a researcher, and we're all so connected, right? As you mentioned, laptops, phones, and I wanted to post once on my Facebook page. People used to go outside without their phones, and they were fine. It might be hard for some people to believe, but actually, you were okay. Are you positive? Are you nervous? What do you think the future holds?
Wow.
Yeah, and
Yeah,
you could take that any way you want.
so I think we have seen the damage that spending so much time in front of screens has done. To me, the COVID epidemic was an awakening for nature. I think for many of us, as we were stressed and we were in our houses, we realized that nature was something that we needed. And you saw this just huge jump in people that were walking outside and that were, going to their parks, going to the woods, and using it to reduce stress. And so I've seen just in the last couple of years the number of researchers that are working in this field just blossom. There's a huge number of researchers and this project with the military, seeing that come out and seeing, Congress realize, hey, this is an issue that we need to deal with. We work with REI. They're a funder now, and they've kind of said we need to do this. This is the right thing with our funds. So more and more philanthropic efforts are going towards nature, and so it's really like a renaissance, I think, of the idea that nature is essential. And it's stuff that dates back to Aristotle and Hippocrates and stuff, but we forgot it. And I think that's really the interesting thing is it's like with all of modern medicine, we forgot the benefits of nature, and now we're seeing nature prescriptions become more and more common. And the medical community is really embracing this. At Houston Methodist, we are building a healing garden, and the leadership there is like, we get it. We're supporting nature. They support our center. And I'm very hopeful for the future. And I do think this is something that, once people hear it, they go, yeah, of course this makes sense. I want to get in on that, because I think it is, what's good for humanity.
And I think what you said before, it's just people not thinking of it. They just need to know. And then
You just need to know, right?
a
Like,
little
make it a
effort.
priority.
It's not like you have
Yeah.
to, it's not like sticking to a diet that's hard. That seems harder, but just like kind of just sitting in nature for a little bit. Just
Yeah,
do
just
it.
sitting, spending some time and enjoying it. And I think
Yeah.
it's great finding your time where you can go out and even just sit on that park bench and just enjoy,
Yeah.
the world around you, or take your kids, to be active at a playground. Just find those times in nature and, embrace. I think that's the biggest thing, is it? And everyone we work with, they get it. And we've been working on green spaces too at our offices. We put in a courtyard that we green the spaces between our buildings. And, those built environment things make such a difference, because it makes it easy. And then I don't even have to say anything. Our students now sit outside because they want to, right? And that's the beauty of putting in great spaces, is that they're there. And people will use them because they're the preferred place to be. Restaurants, anywhere else where people have a chance to sit outside, people usually take the outdoor seating first because there's that preference. So a lot of the built environment's important too.
Dr. Mike, this was great. Thank you so much. And I guess in the most recent months coming, what is some of the research that we can look for, or like the next published studies that you're coming out with in the works?
Yes, we've got a couple of studies that we're working on right now. We're working with 12 universities across the country
Wow.
at college students and mental health. We've seen this crisis like many populations in our student population, and so we're going to have some results out on that, which I think is going to be fascinating. We also have a study right now where we took people into an office setting and exposed them to either having the windows open with all this wonderful nature outside, or closed. And we exposed them in the second condition to either having natural scents piped in, so the smell of woods in the office environment, or the traditional office smell. And we saw that in both conditions, we saw an improvement in attention and willingness to share and intellectual capacity. Like, it's amazing what it can do. So, hopefully we'll help lead office design as we move forward. And I always tell people, what's the most wanted attribute in an office? And it's having a view, right? Everybody wants the window office. And so I think that's fascinating. And now we'll have evidence to say actually people are more productive in those offices.
Dr. Nature, then.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much. I think, is there anything else you wanted to add or take home points, websites, anything like that?
Yeah, so we have a new nationwide effort that is called the Nature and Health Alliance. And you can find us on Google. We have a website, and we are putting up more material, more research that's there. And our other partner is ParkRx America. And they have information for both providers and for patients about getting more nature into your day. So check those out. And hopefully, everyone that's listened to this can figure out a way to add more nature into their days.
Okay, that's great. And I will find these and link them for the listeners in the podcast description so they'll have them right there. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. I think it's such a fascinating topic. And yeah, I hope it inspires people to go outside and frolic in nature a little bit. Just have some fun.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
And if the other studies come out, please let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I agree, the college student one, I'd be super interested in seeing that one.
Yeah, we're just so we you know we kind of had to work on the semester. So by the end of the semester, which will be May, we'll have
May.
all the data collected, and then we'll have then we'll get the paper written. So we did ours last year at A&M, but I had to recruit all these other universities, which 12
Yeah.
universities.
That's a
But
lot. That's a lot. Yeah.
it's cool. We're
But it's
excited about
good.
it.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
a big study.
It is a big study, and it's everything from little tiny universities to we're the largest university on campus in America at 75,000 students.
Wow.
Yeah, A&M is huge. It's
Yeah.
Texas.
It's Texas. Yeah, everything's big in Texas, right? All right. Well, thanks so much and enjoy your weekend there.
Thank
And
you too.
I'll probably get into nature this weekend just after
Oh
that.
yeah, now you have to now,
Now
right?
I have to. Yeah. All
All
right.
right.
Take
Have a good
care.
one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in. Who is on their way right now to go for a hike in the woods? Anyone? Anyone? don't let your concrete digital jungles keep you away from nature therapy. At least give it a shot. Why not? Why not? Please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast. And if you like to read things, my monthly newsletter, there is a sign-up link for that in the podcast description. I write it and I just started adding guest posts too. And no spam, I promise. All right. And now it's time for the closing quote. Here it is. Those who contemplate the beauty of the earth find reserves of strength that will endure as long as life lasts. There is something infinitely healing in the repeated refrains of nature, the assurance that dawn comes after night and spring after winter. That is from Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. I don't know if that is mandatory reading today or what's going on with books and schools. I know there's some fight over that, but if you haven't read it, you definitely should. It's moving. It was moving when she wrote it. It's still relevant today. All right, that is it for today, and hope you tune in next time. I hope you all have a good day wherever you are, and goodbye for now.